We're here in the Congressional Corner with David Hawkins, who is editor-in-chief of The Fulcrum, a news outlet focused on reversing dysfunction in American government. He's also former senior editor of Congressional Quarterly and Roll Call. Welcome back, David Hawkins. You are the brightest of lights when it comes to understanding what's happening in the Congress and in the executive branch. And so it was the third presidential impeachment in U.S. history, but the second in 20 years. What do you think? Is this the roadmap for what's going to be happening in the future?
Yes, I would. I'm sad to say so. When the Clinton impeachment ended 20 years ago, I edited a story for CQ, which I was then an editor at, sort of trying to predict, is this going to be the new normal? Is this going to was this a never again or somewhere in between? I think now we're down to the new normal. I think there is very little doubt. I think there's little doubt that if the president's reelected this fall and the Democrats stay in charge, I don't think they would hesitate to try and impeach him a second time.
And what if David, I'm sorry to interrupt. What if the Democrats take the Senate? Now they have the Senate and the House.
Well, there's still, we should remember that, yes, if they take the Senate, and I would say is a decent shot at that, maybe a more than decent shot at that, there's no way that they are going to take the Senate so overwhelmingly that they come even close to that magical two-thirds majority that is required to remove a president from office.
But it will
so,
be
yes, hilarious. Chuck Schumer could be the majority leader. They would set the agenda. They would run a more vigorous trial, presumably. But I think, you know, we shouldn't expect that a 52 or 53 seat Democratic majority would really ultimately have much more success than the McConnell Senate this year.
Okay, so David Hawkins of Fulcrum, let's talk for a second, now that you've raised it, about the Schumer-McConnell relationship. How's that going? What would you say about that?
I was going to interrupt and say, is there evidence that that exists? They do not have much of a relationship. They certainly don't have the kind of relationship that the two Senate leaders had 20 years ago, during the Clinton trial, when Tom Daschle, the Democrat from South Dakota, Trent Lott, the Republican from Mississippi, you know, it really late at night, I was having trouble remembering which one was which, who was in the majority and who was in the minority at the time of the trial, because they worked hand in glove to come up with a trial process that made the Senate look like it was doing its duty, but not wasting time. They both knew the end result was that Clinton was going to be acquitted. Trent Lott wasn't pounding on the table saying, let's do whatever we can to acquit the guy. Very different, very, very different than what we have now, where there is minimal effort that Schumer and McConnell talk hardly ever during before the trial in those couple of weeks, that interregnum between when the House impeached the president and when there was that sort of delay where they were trying to not send over the articles to try and see what the shape of the trial was going to be. McConnell essentially stopped talking to Schumer, said, I'm going to do it my way without consulting with you. Pretty radical departure. I'm sort of tired in my career of saying this is a new low. This is a descent to a new place, but that was a descent to a new place.
Representative Elise Stefanik, big news up around here. She has a pretty red district, although it has been represented by a sort of blue dog Democrat in the past, she is now getting tons of money from all over the United States for her role, aggressive role in defending the president. What do you make of her?
Well, that was a shift, right? I mean, I think you know her better than I, I have paid some attention to her. Of course, she was, she was a darling of the Republican Party, the youngest Republican woman, I believe, ever elected to Congress. She was somebody who was on everybody's radar screen as a future national leader for the party. And part of the way she positioned herself initially was to be something of a centrist.
Yes. Skeptical.
And just at the end of last year, at the end of 18, after the Democrats swept back to power in the House and the number of Republican women in the House was reduced to its smallest number since the early 1980s, it was Stefanik who took on the Republican leadership and said, look, you old white guys need to pay attention, or we're going to become nothing but the party of old white guys, and I'm going to start recruiting more and more women candidates to run as Republicans, whether you like it or not. And, you know, kind of took on the old boys club that runs her party. Now, a year later, she is best known, right, as the as one of the principal antagonists of all of the witnesses at the House Intelligence Committee hearing, and now is one of the president's biggest defenders. So she's clearly made a different calculus about where she wants her career to go.
She's got a pretty good opponent, Tedra Cobb. Can she lose? In other words, can some of the pro-Trump people who are sitting up there in the red district say, I don't like the way this guy talks, let's teach him a little lesson?
Well, I guess it's possible. I mean, can you tell me, Tedra Cobb didn't come all that close?
No, she did not the last time, but Trump wasn't where he is now. He wasn't nearly as obnoxious. He didn't give a White House press conference in which he sat there and beat his chest and basically signaled he was going to get even with his enemies. There's something that is un-American about that, and I think the framers saw that. So even if you're a Republican, it seems to me there are times to kick a bully in the behind. And the reason I say that is that the House of Representatives did turn blue.
It did. But it seems like the reaction to the House of Representatives turning blue was that the Republicans rallied behind their sort of tribal loyalty to the president even more so. I haven't been, you know, up to the North Country since last year, but I've been to other sort of places that are a little bit demographically like it. And you hear time and time again, yes, he's a bully. Yes, I don't like the way he talks. Yes, he's demeaning. Yes, it's, you know, or you hear, yeah, it's kind of a refreshing hoot. He tells it like it is. But either way, whether they like the rhetoric or not, what they do like is job creation. They like low inflation. They like, you know,
federal judges.
Like the fact that they're federal judges. Yes, the judges. They like, you know, where things are on abortion protection of the unborn, as they said, and protection of their guns. So they like him on policy and are willing to forgive him on personality.
How likely, you got a minute and a half, how likely is Trump to win another term?
Well, gosh, that will, of course, all depend on who the Democrats nominate. I do think it's, you know, in a minute and a half, I would say if they nominate somebody from one of the folks in the so-called liberal lane of the party, it looks pretty grim that one of those at this point could defeat Donald Trump. If you look at the state-by-state polling in the swings in those upper Midwest states that all fell for Trump last year, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, they do not look like they could win in those three states, and that means Trump wins again.
And Mike Bloomberg in 47 seconds, has he got a shot?
Yes, I think he does. Of course, everybody says, well, nobody's ever won with the strategy Bloomberg has of skipping the early contests and just putting it all in the big states. That's true. No one has ever come close to spending the kind of money that Michael Bloomberg is prepared to spend. We sort of lose track of the fact, you know, Tom Steyer may have a 200-foot yacht that he's sailing around trying to win the presidency, but Mike Bloomberg has like a 600-foot yacht. He's going to swamp this thing. If he makes good on what he says he's going to do, he can spend so much money that I think he can make a strong run, especially, of course, if Joe Biden collapses and if people get anxious about Pete Buttigieg's age and experience.
David Hawkins is editor-in-chief of The Fulcrum, a news outlet focused on reversing dysfunction in American government. He's former senior editor of CQ Roll Call. But more than any of that, he's a guy who we call from time to time to give us a perspective on what's happening in government. Thank you so much, David. It's always great to talk
to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alan.